KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. We've had a lot of great shows this year. Tom Stoppard, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Sarah Pauley. But the most excitement I've got from anybody is when I said I'm going to have Key and Peele come in to do the show. So let me introduce Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele. They're Key and Peele. See, now I get to say it the way you guys say it.
There you go.
And I'm such fans of you guys just from Matt TV. And one of the differences between this show, I think, is that in every Matt TV sketch, it's almost like you had to declaim what the sketch was in the first line. Mm-hmm. And the first season of the show especially, the episodes were so packed, but also you were sort of treating more like we have to show we can play characters. Mm-hmm. That really felt like the motivation, the incentive, is that we have to establish ourselves as comic actors. Is that what the show was for you guys?
Yeah, I think we wrapped the whole everything around the show in the fact that we love to be chameleons. We love to play things real. And, you know, after so many years on Mad TV, which, you know, had its real high points and, you know, it's not so high points of doing the wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And
hey, we're doing comedy.
We're doing comedy. You know, it's like, all right, what's our dream show? Well, you know, we're improvisers. We're used to playing on bare stages. So let's get everything looking filmic. Let's get everything and let's do the emotional justice to these characters. And Keegan is, of course, you know, he's a Shakespearean trained actor. So he's getting to all of a sudden use these skills in comedy that maybe you got to use less on Mad. I don't know.
Oh, I think so. Because, I mean, think about on Mad, I can't think about how many times I hesitate to use the word allowed, but I will. Allowed to play the straight man, and I relish it on Key and Peele. People come up to us a lot and say, I love how even the show is in regard to who's driving the comedic engine of the scene and who's playing a really real human as a straight man. So we get to do all different types of scenes. I like the variance of it.
One of the things I love about the show, and I guess you hear this a lot, is it's really for me about acting. Because I hesitate to use the word sketches because I don't really feel like that. I feel like as you guys are beating these things out, you're trying to come up with a kind of an emotional truth for these things to play to. Am I mistaken in thinking that?
Oh, no. That's definitely right. I think the essence of what makes comedy good is that it has to be grounded. The more tethered to reality you put these absurd things, the more connection you can give the person at home. So I think our philosophy is if a character is going to be crying, then you really have to try and cry. You have to try and go there, and then that's how you're going to accentuate the true absurdity of whatever you're exploring.
I want to ask you guys about this because some of these pieces have been about pride, about somebody refusing to let go of a fixed idea, mm-hmm. and the absurdity of that. It so much plays on ideas of black masculinity anyway and masculinity in general, and you guys are kind of often doing that, I should say. Does that feel like it's one of the driving forces in the show as well?
I think it's evolved into that. It's a lot of it is us discovering who we are and parts of who we are so that we have discovered that that's kind of become part of our calling card is strange types of subversion or emasculation of what people believe the traditional African-American male identity is or what it's supposed to be. So if anything, we're the opposite of Richard Roundtree. And I think we're in a different place in our history too. We're in a kind of transitional place in our history where us bolstering ourselves up as a culture is maybe evolving and changing a little bit. So now we feel that there's a place for our kind of humor, which is to say, hey, black men are humans too. Black men get frustrated and cry and get upset about things and find themselves, whether they want to or not, in vulnerable situations, as opposed to always being, if you think about black exploitation, I mean, Dolomite wasn't a human. Shaft was barely a human. They were superheroes. And we needed those superheroes, I think, at that time in our collective history, but more specifically our history, our African-American history. So I think Jordan and I are kind of bathing in the middle of this transitional time.
I have friends who are stand-ups and comic actors, and there's such a hunger for black comedy that I wonder, Jordan, when you guys went to pitch this to Comedy Central, if that was kind of implicit in your pitch that there is an enormous appetite for this is not being served anywhere.
Yeah, I think that was kind of, I think it might have been the unspoken truth in the room. I think we were expected to be somehow attempting to fill the Chappelle niche, the void left by Chappelle, which of course is, you know, a completely inspiring show to us. But I think that our real voice and what we wanted to bring across is the fact that Keegan and I, we can play anybody. And we can play any race, we can play any gender, or we like to think we can. Mm-hmm. And we like to explore all of that on our show. So our true hope is that at the end of watching an episode or at the end of watching one of our seasons, that one would be left kind of confused about their own preconceived notions about race. And that if point someone in the direction of the conversation about race and ultimately to say, yeah, race is the ultimate absurd notion. We're living with these rules that are based on an age-old absurdity about human nature, is that we categorize people based on where we're from, where what our skin looks like. And so we can't expect to kind of solve all that with one sketch, but we think when you look at the entirety of our work, and you see, oh, these guys are, you know, code switching here, but then they're playing, you know, a Latino gang who do the same thing here. But then, oh, look, they're doing...
Well, you played a Native American in the kind of imitation Power Rangers sketch.
Oh, yeah.
But one of the things I want to talk to you guys about, really, is I find myself thinking about the first iteration of Saturday Night Live when I watched this show, which is when those things are really about acting. Mm-hmm. You get to believe what they were playing. And it even comes down to in The Angry Interpreter. I mean, those aren't just attitudes you're playing. Those are real characters. And you know, when Luther is being the thought balloon in Obama's head, he's using facts. He's not just sort of like saying, hey, he's right because he's black.
If anything, he's saying he's right because he's enraged. Whether he's black or white or yellow or anything, we'd like to think there is an emotional integrity to the thought bubble. Those comedic engines derive from the need the character has. And sometimes, you know, we do it all different ways, right? I mean, sketches come to us in all different ways. But the fact of the matter is very often, I think, when I look at my partner's modus operandi, a lot of it is I've noticed this behavior and the comedic game of the sketch comes out of the behavior of the human first, as opposed to trying to think about what's the funniest thing we could do here and we'll shove some characters into it later.
By the way, it's the treatment. I'm talking to Keegan Michael Key and Jordan Peele. They're Key and Peele. And also in the first season of the show, when people didn't really know you, it almost felt like to me you had to prove yourself as actors. I mean, that felt like you were really doing that. No, no, this is what these pieces are. And I just rewatched the episodes after I laughed a bunch of times just to watch the performance aspect of it.
Mm. That's really great to hear. If we're going to have a voice, it's going to be wrapped around this question. What can only Keegan and I perform? What sketch are we more equipped than the rest of the world to pull off for whatever reason it is? And that's how we get in there. The commitment in the acting that you're noticing comes as much from our desire to have people look at us and say, okay, wait, I'm confused. What are they? The reason we step into these different characters. I think in both of our upbringing, we kind of both went a little crazy at some point in our own individual ways.
How so?
Because of categorization, you know, feeling like we were in between environments, in between cultures, in between everything in this society, in this country that is insistent on categorizing people. So I think that that's one of the reasons Keegan and I, you know, we happen to be a mixed race. We happen to have very just interesting, slightly atypical, or I guess very atypical upbringings in different ways. And I feel like the reason we've become what we've become as far as performing, you know, our identity as actual actors is still kind of up for grabs. It's or as personas ourselves is up for grabs. But one thing that we do know about our personas is we can be anyone at any time. I love dressing up like a woman and doing the drag bit. You can tell I'm relishing it because I love going to that place and being vulnerable in that place. And it's scary. And I think especially for what's expected from a black man.
It's funny because you say I did a documentary, The Blacklist, and we had Keanu Harvey Waynes was there talking about the idea of drag. He said at some point, no, I'm sorry, he was responding to Chappelle saying at some point they make you put on the dress. Right. If you're a black man, he would say, no, that's not it. It's just you want to be funny.
Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, he said Jack Benny wore a dress. The Three Stooges wore dresses. You know, it's just we shouldn't be hemmed in by the idea that you're going to be robbed of your masculinity because you're a black man in a dress. The fact is, if it's a way to play a character and to connect, that's something you want to do. And it's interesting that it seems to be as much unconscious as anything else, using the show as a way to kind of explode expectations about people of color in comedy.
Yeah, absolutely. We've decided we're not going to be fettered culturally. So we're just going to do whatever it is that we want to do. You know, we have an episode that's coming up that I'm very excited about, where it's a scene ostensibly about the Second Amendment and how the country feels, but it's set in the 1790s. And Jordan and I are both playing congressmen, and we have melanin in our skin, and we have powdered wigs on our heads. Please enjoy the scene. Please don't get hung up on the fact that race is an equatorial phenomenon and that we happen to have melanin in our skin. It's a scene about the Continental Congress and whether or not people should be able to bear arms. That's what it's about. Are we men of African-American descent in the scene playing congressmen? Yes. Who cares? We just want you to kind of watch the scene. And so it's intrinsic to our makeup. We're so ambivalent inside about where we're supposed to live. I mean, the term that you used to use a lot, Jordan, was that we're almost sometimes like referees, the cultural referees in a manner of speaking, because it's like, where do we fall? And that's why code switching is a phenomenon that works for us, because how am I supposed to behave? And so in our show, that's the exploration, is that we behave all different ways. And I don't know, it feels freeing to me. It feels liberating to me to be able to do that.
No, that's the excitement for me in watching it and just talking to people, and not just people of color, is that there are so many boundaries that are being broken. And I think there's this thing you were talking about a little bit, Jordan. There's the kind of an ambition that you feel, especially when it's been thwarted by so many ways by the expectations of what people of color in comedy are supposed to do, that you guys just said, hey, we're just going to kick the wheels off, and either you stay in or you don't.
Yeah, and that's not to say, I mean, we definitely seek approval from African Americans. I think we are constantly trying to put together a show that is, for lack of a better way to say it, is for black people. Black people can sit back and they can go, oh, see, this is our jam right here. Now, at the same time, we do things that are very risky in that field. And one of the things comedically that we talk about all the time is Keegan and I, we don't want to play characters that win all the time.
I mean, that's a time-honored comedic tool is the long-suffering character that doesn't win.
Right.
I mean, it's Chaplin.
And this was, yeah. And I was, you know, I was inspired by, you know, Martin Lawrence growing up. And he, I thought, was the first black comedian I can remember that really was able to play both a charismatic character and characters, but accentuate the unlikable, the flaws of them.
Well, they relished that unlikability.
Oh, and that. And I never noticed that until Jordan mentioned that. And I said, my gosh, Martin Lawrence is, in a manner of speaking, he's kind of one of the Ralph Cramdens of his era. Mm-hmm. He never won. He was always put upon. In fact, yeah, the great thing was sometimes the other characters that he played, the bigger over-the-top characters he played, were the great foils to him losing again and slapping his head. And he had a very interesting, like, Lou Costello energy about, man, Gina! You know, this whole, nothing went his way. But you're right, it's not winning and emasculation, I think, are not necessarily, they're not mutually inclusive. They don't have to be the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think it went because we had this observation about what does work comedically and what black people haven't sort of been able to pull off. That fell into the equation of things that we can do that haven't been brought to the table that could be our voice. We're also so inspired by In Living Color and, like I said, the Chappelle Show. Those are shows where the voice was, you know, the black people won in every sketch.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you know, that was inspiring in its own different way. Now, when Keegan and I get here, we're at this point where it's like, okay, well, do we do that sketch, or is that going to just look like, oh, these guys are doing Living Color sketches? Or do we explore this new ground that is fertile and has all these possibilities, and we can bring any different character to this kind of equation? Yeah, so yeah, you're right. And you notice we die a lot in our sketches.
Yeah, we die a lot. We do die a lot. Yeah, yeah.
Well, we have to take a break and let these guys not die. It's The Treatment. My guests are Keegan Michael Key and Jordan Peele, the one who's pounding the table over there. The stars of Key and Peele's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Jump into a new mode of music discovery with the KCRW Music Mine. It's our first iPad app dedicated entirely to music exploration. The Music Mine brings you an interactive experience with a constantly evolving galaxy of audio, video, and photos. Discover by artist, by DJ, or by song, and easily share the music you love with friends. The KCRW Music Mine. Dig into it on your iPad. More info at kcrw.com.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. My guests are Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele, the stars of Key and Peele on Comedy Central. We were talking before about not winning, and one of the things that it's really fun about the sketches is that they're all territorial. I mean, one guy or woman will stake a piece of territory and kind of fight for it just by saying, well, this is who I am, and this sort of need to sort of be honest, even to the point of being delusional about being honest, it's the thing that runs through the sketches too, right? Think about that sketch in the first season with the insane NFL names and just that. Yeah. So that, no, this is right.
There's definitely something with lying that we are kind of obsessive about comedically. And when we did our pilot, we pitched a show actually that every episode has its own theme. And the pilot, the theme was going to be lying. And we would also call it false bravado. And if you look at any sketch in that pilot, you realize there's some form of, standing by your guns even when, you're out of ammunition that's in there. And I think as we went on to write, the idea of the themes sort of went away because I think we found that was a running theme in our work. And that kind of happened organically.
Yeah. I mean, it's the thing about standing by your gun. I like that, Jordan. Standing by your guns, even if they're empty. I mean, that's just Stanislavski. You know, it's just being a character who has a super objective in your life
and playing intent.
It's playing objectives and playing intent. So I think the other thing that's been fun is trying to make sure that people understand that African American culture isn't a monolith. I mean, Jordan, I think I've heard Jordan say the phrase many times, you know, that black dude who's like this, as opposed to that black dude who's like that, as opposed to I'm playing a black dude. It's playing all the different various shades of quote unquote black dudes, black men. And then, of course, we dip out and play other races as well. So there is that, like you were just, I've never thought of it that way, but you're saying staking your claim, like in the East-West Bowl names, it's saying, well, this is part of my culture. Oh yeah, well, my name is part of this. You know, whatever one gleans from that scene, that's a really interesting way of looking at it.
I keep going back to acting because I just feel like you talked about lying, but each of these sketches, and so many rather, I should say, are about kind of honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And I just find it to be a really interesting thing to do in terms of basically making a comedy about our relationship to honesty.
Our relationship to honesty and our relationship to hypocrisy, the opposite, too, is kind of how we look at it. I think it's two sides of the exact same coin.
Right.
Is we look at, let's expose the people who are busted, who are saying one thing but feeling another or doing
or behaving in another way.
Another. And you mentioned it before. I think the reason that is fertile ground for us for comedy is because there's layers there. There's a layer, and what we've been finding, especially in these last two seasons, as we kind of dissect our work and see what's going on underneath it, no pun intended, but in the best comedy is the comedy that has layers, where there's something happening on the surface, but then there's a comedic game underneath that the audience can infer. The audience can know and be part of the comedic equation.
Let's look at the laundromat sketch, which
the
is...
The laundromat, there you go.
Which
is
that exactly, sort of thing where one person is clinging to this is a center, this is the nexus of black culture.
Right.
Not the barbershop across the street, which has been depicted too many times.
Right, right.
And that was almost a Brechtian piece of material to me because it's really funny and about honesty and delusion and also really kind of melodramatic at the same time.
And there's that layer for the audience to pick up that he's not really happy on the inside. He's trying to project, it's an old guy runs the laundromat and he is insisting it is the best place, it's better than the barbershop, better place to hang out, more fun, and it is clearly it's just a laundromat that's sad and empty.
And bereft of people.
Right, and no point in the sketch does Keegan's character, my nephew say, uncle, this laundromat ain't that good.
Right.
But that's there for them to find. So I think that's why the whole lying and the question of where truth is fertile ground for the...
Well, if we don't speak, structurally speaking, you mentioned earlier, Elvis, it's just the behavior of the humans interacting with each other. There's never a thesis statement at the beginning of the sketch. If it is, the statement is implicit through the behavior. So it's always show, don't tell. Because I've always been a firm believer, always in my whole life and in my career, that your job as a creator or an actor is to give breadcrumbs to the audience. The audience has a job to do, and when you give them visual cues, they enjoy figuring out the visual cue. All you have to see is a bunch of people frolicking in the barbershop, and you see a laundromat with nobody in it. Just those visual cues are, in a way, exciting the senses. You're going, oh, I'm putting 2 + 2 together.
And by the way, I think this is one of the things. There's several choices, I think, that we've made that are against the rules as far as television watching are concerned. I think this is one of them. People don't necessarily like to be challenged in this way. You know, when people come home, they like to know what they're going to see. They want to sit back. They want to know what they're getting into. They want to have the preview clip. They want to have seen the clip telling them what's coming up in this episode, and they want to see it. They don't want to be surprised. That's why recurring characters have so much success in sketch shows as far as bringing people back. You know, and I think in the early days, we were coming out of Mad TV, which was so recurring character heavy. We were like, no, you know what? We have to sort of take a stand here and keep the audience off balance. We want the audience to not know what's coming next. So ratings-wise, I think we know stepping in, we might take a hit, especially in the early stages. And that's one of the sort of scary decisions that we made that I think is now starting to pay off. People realize that part of the voice of the show is the beauty, the real beauty of what a sketch show can bring, which is what the unexpected.
Suka, that's I'm saying that in the first half of the show, really, I feel that people responded to the fact that there was surprise. And I mean, I think we're told that you want to get a TV show that tells you what you're going to see, then you see it, and you're told what you just saw in case you somehow missed the point of what you just saw. What you guys have done is really sort of, especially in the first season, built a show that was, it felt to me like a show you were building was a show that had to, just by virtue of what you wanted to do, defy categorization anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Our director one time said, we have a tremendous director, a young man by the name of Peter Atencio, who's terribly, terribly talented. And he said, kind of would it be cool if all the sketches looked like a set piece, a comedic set piece in the middle of a feature. So there's this 96-minute comedy, and we're just going to drop right in the middle of it. Which is actually the definition of sketch, is that it's just a small little moment in the lives of people. So then we just try to engineer in the sketches the catch-up moments, as opposed to, like you said, laying it all out.
Right. And I think it also, I think we view sketch, one of the purposes of sketch, to be a boundary pusher, to be, and kind of hate this word, but kind of love this word, but to be edgy. And the problem with edgy is the definition of edgy is very...
What is the definition? Yeah.
It's vague, and it has a connotation that...
So it's like a brand name, like alternative music, right?
Exactly. Right. Yes, and it's something that... It's a very studio-driven word. You know, we want edge. We don't really know what that means, but we want edge. Well, for us, and I think for me, it means that you are going to explore the boundaries. And so all these ways that we were attempting to do something new... This included this idea of let's keep the audience off balance. We're all our ways of finding what edginess meant to us.
It's the truth. I'm talking to Kay Egan, Michael Keith, and Joe Reedon.
Peely?
Yeah. It's funny. Now you guys are in a position where you've done things where people are doing bits in front of you now. You've now become that thing where people are coming up and doing Mr. Garvey and doing that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
that's got to be fun, though. I mean, given that you want to do explorational comedy, rather exploratory comedy, and I like the sound of that, you've now created enough pieces that people are coming up to you and doing your bits in front of you, aren't they?
It is interesting. It is. I mean, Jordan just said, you said the ratings don't reflect that. So there's something fascinating about ritual in human behavior, because that's what they talk about is more often than not, is what I should say. People talk about the college football players or Mr. Garvey or Megan and Andre. And there's some kind of touchstone. There's something, I think, ritualistic that's triggering that pleasure of knowing something that you – recognizing something and getting mm-hmm. on board quicker. But then there are other people who – sometimes you'll have people who are rabid fans of a scene that he and I really adore, but a lot of people don't talk to us about. And so I always wonder, what's that? You know, what's that person hooking into?
Another thing we're always fascinated with, and I think is a part of the voice of our show, is that we're straddling the online realm and television, and sometimes to a kind of awkward extent.
How do you mean awkward?
Well, for the first two seasons, you know, we put so much stuff online, and the ratings were not reflecting the online, the television ratings were not reflecting
the online success.
Mm-hmm. And so we're in uncharted territory here. So,
did the metrics speak to Comedy Central based on the online?
The only conclusion that some of us and some of the people at Comedy Central could really put together from what we were seeing is the fact that we are, so many people know us as an online entity, is that challenging the idea that, hey, this is an event that you don't want to miss on television? Now, the real answer to the question is, all right, a couple of years, it's not going to matter. Internet's going to win.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's just what it is. But the storm is looming.
But no, but I'm glad you said it because I was going to get to that and I got a little distracted because I often am. This feels like, to me, a millennial comedy show where it's, because it is so dense, it can be unloaded or rather unpacked.
It can be unpacked, yep.
At anybody's discretion. Mm-hmm. And that online interaction you're talking about really lends itself to that. Mm-hmm. Was that a conscious thing in the way you guys are putting the show together too? To sort of like have so much stuff that it almost demanded to be sort of looked at piecemeal?
No. Correct me if I'm wrong, but we fashion the shows to have a flow. You're right, Elvis, that the show does exist in such a way that you can unpack it effectively and enjoy it as you a la carte. But what's part of it, even the marketing for this third season has been, but you may not have yet seen your favorite Key and Peele sketch because they don't all go online. So that's the thing. But, you know, like Jordan, you were saying, what's awkward about it? Well, sometimes what's awkward is I went home to watch our last home game, our Tigers' last home game. I was just happened to be home.
Why don't you stab me in the eye? It'll be less painful. Yeah. As you were saying,
and so,
living off of your celebrity. Yes, you went home to watch the game. Wow, that's
and
nice.
And we ran, and going in the opposite direction, there's a person walking past you and screams at you in the concourse of Comerica Park, I love your videos! That person is not aware of the fact that there is a program on a television network called Key and Peele. I would love to know the numbers. I would love to know how many people think that there's an internet phenomenon called Key and Peele. We're at the vanguard of this thing. It's weird. I feel sometimes, and this is just me speaking in a very grandiose way, but there's like a teeter-totter. And television, appointment watching television is one side of the teeter-totter. The internet is on the other side of the teeter-totter. And there's a handful of shows, Key and Peele included, that's the fulcrum of that teeter-totter. And which way, like you said, it's only going to go one way. But how do we define ourselves? Because technically people have said we are not a YouTube sensation because we started on television. Mm-hmm. Yet, then how do you categorize those 300 million hits?
Yeah, if you're momentum, to finish your physics metaphor here, yeah. If your momentum has swung to the internet, then you are a YouTube phenomenon.
Right, exactly. So how,
in a de facto way, right?
In a de facto way. So how do you define it? It's really fascinating.
I think we, and this is where the awkwardness comes, is because I think Keegan and I, if we had our way, every single sketch would go online. You know, our work would get out there for people to see. And it really is this sort of interesting, it's a money conversation.
Sure.
Yeah, because if you're doing it just for online, Comedy Central's not going to spend that kind of money on it.
No.
Guys, I'm so sorry we're out of time. Please, will you come back?
Absolutely. We'll come back tomorrow.
I won't be here. By the way, after this show airs, you go like 5 points the other direction. This, I have to thank my guests, the stars of Key and Peele, Keegan Michael Key and Jordan Peele.
Elvis got the last laugh.
I'm glad they recorded that. This show at KCRW, the show is recorded and mixed by Melissa Morton. It's edited and produced by Jenny Radelet. I'm going to go wash my hair. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.